You have all the tools that you will ever need. You awaken every day and you decide if you are careful. Do you think that you were born without a gift? Like a star, you are unique. I'm telling you that you are special. You have all the tools that you will ever need. Every day's a new beginning. Start or finish what you're thinking. We are waiting for your gift to be revealed. Only you can hold the passion. See it through. This is your destiny. Your destiny.
Okay, ready, set, go. Welcome to season 3 of Read the Future Conversations podcast. My name is Derek Tangap, and today we have our guest speaker, Carmen. Due to privacy concerns, we will not be releasing his last name. But however, Carmen, please, I would highly prefer you, I think, introduce yourself and help our listeners know a brief overview of who you are, or if you want to focus on really what sort of topics you would be helping the guest speakers getting a sense of awareness, and that would be appreciated.
Yes, hello. Yes, as you mentioned, we're going to be talking about the struggle of Iranian people that basically started on. It's been going on for years, but the flashing point was September 16 of 2022, when so-called morality police arrested Mahsa Amini. She was visiting friends, family in Tehran, and she was arrested for not observing the code of dress, and subsequently she died in custody. The government claimed that she died of natural causes, but it's been a pattern that this government, Islamic government, has been using. That was the flashing point for the start of the women's led revolution, and we, you know, fast forward to last 2 weeks, when the issue of when the Hamas actually attacked Israel. There are a lot of dynamics going on here. Right now, Hamas and Hezbollah are posing to expand the war with Israel, but what people should realize that the main supporter of Hamas and Hezbollah and other proxies in Middle East are Islamic government. And the reason I'm saying Islamic government, I'm kind of hesitant to use Iran, because Islamic government doesn't represent Iran. I'm going to say Iran, Iranian people. Iranian people are on the same side as Israeli people. They have the same, basically, enemy. One side is Islamic government, Hamas, Hezbollah, and other proxy. Another side are Israel and Iranian people. And there's a lot of things going on as far as the appeasing this government. I'm sure everybody heard about the releasing of $6 billion of frozen money in exchange for releasing the hostages. It is a big mistake. Any money that's released to government in Iran is going to be used for their activities. They're not going to be spending any money to help the Iranian people or for infrastructure or anything positive. So the sooner government around the world, and including United States government and Western European countries, the sooner they realize that in order to have peace in Middle East, they need to start talking to opposition. When I say opposition, opposition to Islamic government.
Right.
And there is a movement going on, and it's good for the people to realize that the government, Islamic government, is not reformable. They are proven. They cannot be trusted. They cannot be trusted in any shape and form.
Wow, no. That is a lot to really break down, to really help the listeners follow or go deeper or just find a clarity on some of those talking points that you have brought up, just to really go back over on some of the things from really where you mentioned 2022, the death of Mahsa Amini and the struggles of the Iranian people. But if you could help us understand more about some of the, you mentioned the morality police, what is the morality police and what sort of is this laws that they are enforcing? I know based on my own understanding, the morality police is enforcing a mandate to is it Islamic law or and how does it affect people? Please go ahead.
Yes. You're absolutely correct. It's a part of the supposedly part of the law enforcement that is responsible to make sure that the people, especially women, conduct themselves as far as the proper clothing. And you are absolutely right. These are Islamic laws. It has nothing to do with the civic laws, and it's something that very selectively against the women. But it has been a cause for people to unite. But what people should realize, it's not just the opposition to the job or the dress code. That was kind of a spark that started the whole thing. At this point, any kind of activity by government against people, it would actually engulf even more anger, and that is just one starting point. It's not like, okay, if the government tomorrow said we are not going to enforce the dress code, which actually they have been doing, but that is not the aim of the Iranian people. Iranian people realize that this government, in so many ways for last 44 years, hasn't been doing anything positive, and the longer they stay in power, the worse is for Iranian people first, and is also for Middle East and for the whole world. And people should realize when the 1979 so-called revolution happened in Iran and Ayatollah Khomeini took over, that is when it started. Actually, they are the one who started Hezbollah in Lebanon and started all these activities that is now we are seeing the results of it, including what happened on October 7 when Hamas attacked Israel. So yes, this government completely is illegitimate, and they don't follow any logic, they don't follow any order. So, and the only language that they've been using to enforce their own point of view is brute force. When I say brute force, arresting people, shutting down the free press, imprisonment, arresting students, long-term prison up to execution. So yeah, this government is at point that have shown that they are not a party that a person can talk to.
So no, like, I think it just seems like there is a legitimate grievances here, and based on what you are expressing, right, there is a legitimate grievances where it seems like an obsessive act by the Iranian morality police to really sort of shape women behavior. And just to really get this in context, I believe over 500 people have been killed and over 20,000 arrested. Are those figures correct?
Because there is no freedom of press in Iran, but based on the best observation and actually the numbers you just quoted, that is probably a low end. So definitely, I wouldn't be surprised if those numbers actually are doubled. But yes, our understanding is at least up to 600 people have been killed, including all of those, including those 600, almost 100 of them under the age of, 18, teenager, and up to 20,000-25,000 people arrested. And in the meantime, if I'm not mistaken, there has been almost probably up to 15 executions since last year, and there are more people on a death row that they are supposed to be executed, but because of the public pressure and public opinion, I think that kind of slowed down. But yes, the numbers are accurate, but as I said, when I say accurate, that those are the best estimate, because it's kind of hard to get the true understanding of the numbers. But yes, but as far as the Iranian government concerned, they have no hesitation to do it again and do it more, because as I said, they don't care about the public opinion of the
I mean, to draw the line out, to really help the listeners sort of get a visual understanding here, please, like, what sort of understand or what sort of like linkage? You mentioned a $6 billion fund release, and then this happened in 2022. So what is the interconnection there, if you don't mind me asking, between the $6 billion and the death of Mahsa Amini?
Actually, there is not, it's not really per se a direct connection, but as the revolution started since last September, and the government of Iran feel the pressure of what is going on in Iran, try to divert the attention by trying to so-called, showing the good will to the West. They released supposedly 5 or 6 Iranian American in exchange of release of some of their prisoners here, but as I guess in order to expedite the situation, one of the requirements they had is lifting some of the sanctions and lifting some of the frozen money, and that's what happened in order to facilitate those releases of those 5 or 6 hostages. They released $6 billion of frozen money. I mean, people don't realize the money that is released is not coming from the U.S. Treasury. These are the money that was obtained by selling Iranian oil, and because there is a sanction, all those money is frozen, and supposedly they ask to release some of those money, the $6 billion, for and a stipulation is the $6 billion supposedly going to be used for the medicine and food, and it's not going to be used in any other purposes. But once that money is released in the hands of government, I'm not sure what kind of a mechanism is in place that actually is going to be used for food, medicine, and other, rather than just releasing it to the. So the connection between what happened in Mahsa Amini and this money is the fact that the government is feeling the pressure and feeling to trying to have a show the different face to the world that you are working with the West, including the nuclear deal. So basically, they're trying to buy some kind of a legitimacy for themselves by showing that, we are working with you guys, but at the same time, the clampdown and opposition to the. They are not letting up on Iranian people. They're still doing as harsh to the people in Iran, but they are trying to show a different face to the world that we are working with you guys. We are trying to work out our differences.
That seems like a manipulative attempt get something and really do not commit to returning the value of what you get. And I think there are a reasonable amount of political analysis of this situation. For example, political analysts on Iran International commented, quote unquote, here, right? They failed to grasp when the roots of discontent have spread to the extent that you are compelled to conduct such massive arrest across the country and from various strata of society, the regime has lost gains of control. And I think that's sort of what you are saying here, that there's no reform an intent in Iran, but then why do you see it relevant for the U.S. to continue to conduct this sort of negotiations? So why do you see it important that?
I think one of the reasons, as well as the United States government and Biden administration, as you know, next year is election in the United States, 2024. So, and based on the polls, he's not doing that well. And especially after what happened when they pulled out of Afghanistan, it was a disastrous pull out from Afghanistan on the last day of the, last day of withdrawal from Afghanistan. I'm sure most listeners remember that there was an explosion. 14 Marines were killed on the very last day. So it was a very, very, nobody forgot that disastrous leaving of Afghanistan. On top of that, what is going on in Ukraine, you know, getting involved there. And so basically, they are trying to, as far as I'm concerned, as you can see, the only reason behind is releasing $6 billion, they are trying to basically buy some political points, to show that, yes, we are making some progress, in the peace with Iran. Maybe we can go back to, nuclear deal. And basically, they try to gain some points with the voters in this country because they are not doing so well. But as I said, they are just, the Iranian government is buying time. I mean, I wouldn't ask them to try to buy time so they can build a nuclear weapon, and then they will be in a much better position to bargain with the West. Just like North Korea. I mean, North Korea is not a prosperous country by no means, but since they are supposedly a nuclear power, they deal with them differently. And so, as I said, I think the only gain that you are getting is to show that you are making progress with Iran, and maybe they get them some when it comes to election, because they want to have some positive news for the American people. But with the economy and everything else going on, I'm not sure if that is there. And as I said, in the long run, it would be a mistake. It would be a mistake to, because as I said, sooner or later, Iranian people are going to operate, is going to rise up and get rid of this government. And hopefully, we're going to be, when I say we, means everybody, Americans, Europeans, going to be on the right side of history and stand with the Iranian people, because this government, it cannot be trusted whatsoever.
No, like to add, I think to really not like stretch or to add another component, where what I'm hearing you initiate or describe is a women-led second Arab Spring year, right? Where you're looking at the liberation of the women suffering, or you're also looking at women's rights coming under freedom. And so is that necessarily the direction of the morality police in terms of the consequential Mahsa Amini death? Or do you see it where you are looking at how the Council on Foreign Relations is also weighing in on how the Saudi-Tehran relationship is twisting? Is that going where you see the Saudi Arabia leading this push for a women-led second Arab Spring?
If we were looking at the situation in a very objective matter, if everybody was on an equal footing with all the actors, respect the law and they conduct themselves according to norms, we can say yes, every one of the subject that you mentioned, including Saudi Arabia and other subject, that would be subject to maybe discussion. But the problem is not any of these the things, Mahsa Aminis or hijab or morality police or nuclear deal or any of this. The problem is, in order to solve this problem, is to stop negotiation what completely the Iranian government and basically, so they realize they are completely isolated. They have nowhere to go. And once they are gone, then Iranian people have enough resources. When I say resources, manpower, a lot of intellectuals inside Iran, outside Iran, ready to take over. Iran is not going to be like Afghanistan or Iraq. People should realize it's a very young, educated population. So once these people go, once these mullahs go, Iran is not going to be in a chaos. And the sooner they go, the sooner the whole Middle East and the world are going to see the peace. So all these issues that we are talking about cannot be addressed or cannot be solved as long as this government is in power. So I know that's kind of a tall order, but that is the reality.
Then I mean, that is something that, I mean, Iran is currently, you are looking at the situation presently in the Middle East, in Western Asia. But now the Arab Spring that occurred in the past, that was a significant boost to really reducing the reducing Tehran's influence. And over the past few decades, right, Tehran has seemed to cover lost ground. I mean, to forecast here or to really speculate, what sort of maneuvers do you see the people of Iran? Do you see another Arab Spring really effectively accomplishing that objective?
That's very good point. If you look at the news because of what is going on, up to 2 weeks ago, news was nothing but Ukraine, and now it's been Hamas and Israel, and before that was maybe, Trump going to trials and so forth. So if we don't hear the news that everybody thinks maybe revolution in Iran ended or has died or are gone or people, no. The revolution is going at the full force. I mean, people are still fighting, people are still getting shot, they're still going to jail, still anything like that. The only thing that I can see to facilitate and to expedite our goal, which is getting rid of this government, is for the West to, I know I'm not a politician, but the most effective way would be to shut down all the Iranian embassies in every country, and then recall their ambassadors from Tehran and cut off their diplomatic, the economic relationship with Iran. But the problem is because of the energy crisis and because of what is going on in Ukraine and loss of Russian oil and Russian products, it's kind of everything goes back to economy, because in order to what I just said, if they completely isolate Iran, they're going to lose a lot of energy coming out of that part of the world. And because of the fact that they can make a threat against shutting down the flow of oil in the Strait of Hormuz, in Persian Gulf, so everybody going to panic. So everything goes back to the uncertainty about the economy of the world and energy crisis. And I think that's why politicians really concentrating rather than looking at the human rights. Human rights and what is taking place in Iran is taking a back seat to everything else. I mean, as far as I can tell, that's the only reason I can see they're still talking to Iranian government and try to, I guess, appease them.
No, and I think that goes to where, as you noted, right, society, the Iranian society has determined to revolt, given the security measures and given that it has been delayed for so long. And I think what I'm hearing you forecast or what I'm hearing you predict is basically the will of the people to go to the streets to protest.
That is exactly right. I mean, the only reason that Iranian government so far has been able to survive, because when there is a movement going, let's go back to 1978-79 when Ayatollah took over. Back then we had millions in the streets. We had I was in Tehran myself, I remember. We had 2.5 million people in the streets. We had hundreds of thousands in other cities. when you have that many people in the streets, no amount of security, no amount of police, no amount of, they can stop him, and it would fall. But the point is, it hasn't, because of the fact that they are so repressive and they are they are not afraid of any kind of a criminal activity, and the way they arrest people and kill. And there is a really fear on side of people who go to streets, because if they get picked up, they might not ever be in, their family might never be heard of, of them. So as long as there is not a mass movement, I'm talking about hundreds of thousands, millions of people streets, it's going to be probably dragging. But I think it's getting to a point that even middle class in Iran, because up to this point, middle class was kind of staying out of the whole thing, but now middle class is being really squeezed because of the inflation and just the basic necessities of life. And last numbers we are getting, almost 40-50% of Iranians are living a poverty line. So an economy is driving force. So once you get that point, and once people come to streets in millions, that's going to be the end of the Islamic Republic.
And I think just now guide our conversation, this episode, towards the close. I mean, it seems like what we have discussed and covered is really starting off with the value of life, the essential rights of women, but also looking at the need of liberty and freedom in Iran. And I think driving it home now, where from $60 billion negotiation that Biden was looking at, for a prisoner swap, and then looking at where we are at right now with the situation in Western Asia, I think what we are looking at is really the initiation, the catalyst of Iranians being able to attain greater freedom. Is that right?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. Yes, and just to listener know that, as I said, it's a very young population, 40-50% are under the age of 40, very educated, and because of the social media, 40 years ago they could suppress people and nobody would know. Right now, someone gets shot in the streets of Tehran or they execute someone, it goes viral, everybody would find out, and because of social media, information gets around fast, and that is one of the things that government cannot do anything about it, even though they're trying to shut down the internet. But you are absolutely correct. It's for basic freedom and basic liberty, because people in Iran, especially young people, they know what's going on in West. They can see other people, how they live. And when they look at their lifestyle, Iran is a very rich country, a lot of resources, but yet none of those resources is trickled down to the people, and these people who in charge, they could care less about that. And so, as you said, it's for a quest for the freedom and just living like the rest of the world. And but as I said, the Mina Mahsa Amini's death was almost like a catalyst for starting this, and it's not going to go away. And the government trying to concede a lot of things that people want, like from what I'm talking to people in Iran, they are not as harsh on the clothing, cold. People, the women come to the street basically the way they want. They don't have to adhere to any of the morality police code of dressing. But it's beyond that point. They are not looking for freedom of how to dress. They want a freedom to live life under liberty.
Freedom of economic attainment, like being able to essentially not protest, but I mean, protesting is a necessity of, is an outcry of need from the population. And I can happily say that, I think looking at where we are at today and looking at the fact that the Iranian people have the will to really continue to advocate for themselves, I think that will isn't going to fade anytime soon or forever. So I'm happy that this conversation has occurred, and I'm happy that future protesters are going to be the ones that end up uplifting the economy to a But it also where now I think the head of the cleric and member of the Iranian Assembly of Experts, Ahmed, is essentially where it's not going to be a, you can take and we will not retaliate, right? So I think the goal now is to look at how to continue the resistance against the Islamic regime and look and ensuring that the second Arab Spring, as you're predicting, is a successful as well as a well effective action by the people of Iran to gain their freedom. So thank you, Carmen. Thank you so much.
Sure. Anytime.
Well, thank you for being our guest speaker for episode 2 of season 3. I really appreciate it, and I think this has been a very great conversation. Any final comments to yourself?
I just want to finish on the fact that Iranian people, the only thing they expect from us, when I say us, people who live in a free societies with the freedom of press and freedom of ideas, they want us to be their voice. That's all they need. They don't want any weapons. They don't want any foreign intervention. They want us to be their voice to the world that they are struggling for freedom. Thank you.
And just to close up on my end as well, I think this is more of a statement and a question to you is, what sort of governance, what sort of leadership, economic institutions do you see as that voice that the Islamic people are really?
That is a very good question that requires probably another program. But just to summarize it, actually, no, that is a very good question. There are groups that are working on that. There are groups, people who believe in monarchy, people who believe in constitutional monarchy, people who believe in maybe parliamentarian type of government. So these things gonna happen, but once the government goes, the plan is to have a referendum for the people to vote what kind of a government they want, and they can write their new constitution. But, you know, I kind of summarize it, but we can talk about that more specifically in the future.
I believe we will, Carmen. I am happy that we could have this episode. Thank you. Thank you to the listeners for listening, and stay tuned for more insightful on the conversation. And before we leave, Carmen, we would like to ask you to really just help us in a brief statement. Why is this important to our Zonians? Why is this important to our Zonians?
Why is it important to people in Arizona?
Yes.
Because I'm trying to. I think most Iranian in Arizona are aware of what's going on. I'm just trying to bring the awareness to the people who are listening to this podcast. As I said, to be more involved as far as because. You know, people think maybe one person's voice is not important, but any voice at this point, every single voice that can bring out the truth and be the voice of Iranian people for their quest for freedom is very much needed. And I'm sure if they could express their gratitude, they would do it. And as an Iranian American, I can tell you that goes a long way just to be their voice and, you know,
perfect. That's all we have.
Read the Future Conversations is providing this podcast for educational purposes only. Read the Future is a nonpartisan not-for-profit. It neither takes any position on any political issue nor endorses any candidates, political parties, or public policy proposals. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by Read the Future. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by Read the Future employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of Read the Future or any of its officials. You're dead.